I don't think I've ever hired anyone where I didn't have 3 meetings with them. And usually one of those meetings is a more casual lunch, dinner, cocktails, but like you're going to spend a lot of time together. So 2 of those are really focused on explaining to them everything that really goes into the role, answering their questions, painting the picture of a day in life. And then one of them has to be about human connection.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid. This is the show where we talk to executives and founders who are disrupting their companies and industries about what they see differently when it comes to identifying top talent. If this is your first episode, thank you so much for joining us. We are glad to have you. If you're a longtime listener, we always appreciate the support. Everybody, please subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts and give us a great rating. Now, I want to introduce a very special guest. Today, we are joined by Monique Manso. She is the Chief Revenue Officer at Essence Ventures. How you doing, Monique?
I'm great, Oz. How are you doing?
I'm doing really awesome. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It's been a long time coming. We have more than a few mutual friends, and everybody's always told me about your career, your energy, everything about you. So I'm excited to dig into it. Let's get into it.
Same. Your reputation precedes you.
I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to a good episode. So you recently, I think in the past half year or so, you moved into this chief revenue officer role at Essence. Very exciting. I always love to know what like the push and pull when you take on a new job. So I'm interested what pulled you to Essence and what it's like your first year been at the company.
Yeah. So I'm coming up on, gosh, a little over 9 months, if I've done the math correctly in my head. So almost a year. And it has been an amazing first year. I have stepped into a company that has been growing through new acquisitions like Refinery 29, through new launches around existing platforms that already existed here, like our growth in Black Women In series, Black Women in Hollywood, Black Women in Business, Black Women in Sports, and coming soon, the relaunch of 29 Rooms. So it's a very exciting time at this company. Becoming CRO at Essence was very natural and organic for me as a decision. In fact, it feels more like a return to the brand than an entry into the brand. And I'll explain a little bit why. Prior to this, I was at Endeavor as VP of Global Brand Partnerships. And before that, I spent a lot of time, a little over 12 years as the publisher of People in Espanol. But before that, I held 2 corporate sales roles, 1 at Time Inc. So when I talk about a return to the brand, it's because when I was at Time Inc. running corporate sales as the VP of corporate sales there, Essence was in my domain. The sales and marketing team that I led had to package Essence along with the other 30 some odd brands that they would package with our largest corporate advertisers across the entire organization. So I was responsible for that team. This was part of the portfolio at the time because it was owned by Time Inc. And then when I move over to run People in Espanol, we were the sister brand to Essence. So we were the only 2 multicultural brands in the stable. And as I just mentioned, I spent about 12 years at People in Espanol. So in the time that Essence was still part of Time Inc. and I was leading People in Espanol, I always felt like an extension of Essence. And I think the team at Essence felt like an extension of People in Espanol. It was very natural for me because of the corporate experience to be cross-selling Essence and the People in Espanol brand. And so because of all those things, it really does feel very natural to be coming back to the brand where I am now.
Oh, I love that story. And I'm really interested because when I was listening to the experience you said there, I heard editing. Obviously, you've had a long-standing career in media. There's sales, there's marketing. Do you see the chief revenue officer role and the scope that it is kind of being a culmination of all these disparate areas you've been working in? Is this something that you were always looking to do as you grew in your career? Was this the plan all along, or is this something that was just kind of a nice organic thing that you kind of grew into?
No, it was definitely the plan all along. When I was running corporate sales, I kept raising my hand and saying, I feel like I now need to go run a brand because I had a ton of agency experience. I had a ton of corporate sales experience, but I felt like everybody would always look at me and maybe they were thinking, you've never walked a mile in my shoes, sort of owning an entire brand. So that's why I went to People in Espanol. This now takes all of those years of experience and really just pushes them together. You know, I have oversight of everything under the revenue umbrella, if you will, at Essence Ventures. So that's sales, that's marketing, that's account management, it's post-sale activation, it's insights. So all of that has come full circle, and it's really exciting. I had a lot of autonomy at People at Espanol. So a lot of the folks around me always said, God, you really run that brand like a CEO or CRO of the brand, because it was so intricate with the live events business, with a point of care business. And so all of that served me very well for this current experience.
Well, I love that. My curiosity is just popping now, because we know media right now has been going through a fundamental change over the last 10 to 15 years. Different traditional print media have been trying to find new business models. There's innovation happening at all these different companies in terms of how they're driving. So the chief revenue officer at a large established media brand, particularly of Essence, is really important in terms of taking the business into the new way forward. Is there anything you can share there in terms of what the day-to-day is like, say now, maybe versus 10, 15 years ago for somebody who would have been in the same role?
I think that there is a huge emphasis on custom content. And because of the nature of the brand of Essence and all of the sub-brands under Essence, it's even more important to be able to tell authentic and organic stories that can connect with this audience. And so we take all of our insights, we take all of our experience in the space, and really the listening that we do of our audience. So that custom content, branded entertainment is critical. And look, we're stepping into a new world, right? So with AI coming into play in a much bigger way, we'll have more news to talk about that. I can't really talk freely yet. We're going to be launching some test scenarios in the AI space and some labs around the work that we'll do there. And then we're looking at how both of those things, right, technology and storytelling, amplify in a much, much bigger way our experiential platform. So rooted at Sundial Media Group, which is our parent company, and certainly in Essence, is a huge experiential business. And that continues to grow for us. And despite what's happening with media, there's a real passion for these experiences at all ages. Like, people really want to live these moments. So whether you look at our Afropunk franchises, or you look at our big, what I call the Super Bowl of festivals for us, really is our Essence Festival, which happens over the 4th of July weekend in New Orleans. We just celebrated 30 years. Afropunk's going to be 20 years. We're expanding our Beautycom business. We're bringing 29 rooms back at Refinery 29. So I'd say those are some of the big things that we have on the horizon right now.
Lots of exciting things. We'll be paying attention and looking forward to hearing more, particularly the AI and technology aspect of that. Very cool. So we talked a little bit about People in Espanol, but I remember when we first met, you told me that you were a little bit skeptical going into that role, but eventually it gave you new professional purpose, which I love. And I want to hear all about it. So explain that a little bit. Why were you skeptical going in? And then what did you ultimately find?
Yeah, you have a good memory. My gosh, that was a quick conversation we had a while back. I was skeptical going in. My entire background prior to People in Espanol was either on the pan-regional and global side of things, what has traditionally been considered the general market side of the business. I had never worked specifically in multicultural media or specifically in the Hispanic space. And so when I raised my hand, as I mentioned earlier, and said I was ready to go to a brand, I was at a company that owned Real Simple, InStyle, Entertainment Weekly, Cooking Live at Cooking Light, Martha Stewart Living at one point. Like, there were so many exciting things that I was looking at. And People in Espanol had always been in my purview, but I had never thought of myself, quite frankly, as the multicultural lead. So as I was really sort of evaluating it, I started to feel a little panic, thinking, gosh, they're going to put the Latina at the Latina brand. And will that limit my growth in the future? Will that pigeonhole where I go to next, which obviously is my career unfolded? And you've seen that. That's not what happened. But at the time, it was a concern. I had always admired the brand. I had been selling it, and my team had been packaging it at corporate sales. I had always admired the unbelievable edit team that ran the brand. And then when I went over, I quickly fell in love. I realized that for the first time in my career, I was serving a purpose that was so intrinsically linked to me, my history, my ethnicity, my background. And I had been doing that in the pan-regional space working in Latin America, but this was very different now. Here I was in the U.S. Hispanic space, I was very fortunate to cut my teeth in that space at the number one brand that existed in the marketplace. And I got to do some crazy, exciting things, like with the support of the executive leadership team at Time Inc., the support of my editors. We really rallied around fulfilling all of the needs in the community. So I got to launch a festival, right, that was there to celebrate Latinos during Hispanic Heritage Month. At those events, I got to do things like set up scholarships, create really robust community experiences. I had 1 year where I naturalized 250 citizens. So worked with Homeland Security and made them American citizens at my festival, created vertical dedicated completely to health and wellness, and then created a new product out of that went into doctor's offices, right? And still lives today in doctor's offices after I've been gone from the brand for several years now. I was able to create a female empowerment platform that would help close the gap for Latina women in careerism and professionalism and financial independence. So it was really rewarding. It was a great experience. It was a great time in my career. And again, I had the best of both worlds, right? Like working with this unbelievable company, working with this unbelievable brand. And then they let me take it one step further, which is through the filter of People in Espanol, they let me create and launch a multicultural platform across all of the company. And so I got to go back to my roots, right, of this corporate sales environment in cross-brand and cross-cultural audience packaging and selling across all of Time Inc. and then later Meredith, which is the company that bought us later on. So yeah, I went in with a little skepticism. Some of the best times of my life and my career were at that brand.
No, I am just so passionate about people finding purpose in their work and working with purpose and making an impact in what you're doing. That's the type of thing that will get you out of bed in the morning. That's the type of thing that'll keep you going when you hit adversity and run through obstacles. And you're just such a perfect example of that. And sometimes it can be very serendipitous. Sometimes the things that we feel or we believe or we perceive, once we get there, once we see it, once it's in action, it can take us down a completely different road. So that is an amazing story. I'm so glad you shared it. One of the other things that I wanted to talk to you about is that when we look at the demographics in the United States, one of the fastest growing populations is going to be the Latin and Hispanic demographic. There's more buying power in minority groups than there's ever been. You've talked about how this evolving world and how important the multicultural consumer and audience is becoming the actual majority, and how companies need to realize this and start with intention in terms of serving and supporting and marketing to these groups. You've seen that firsthand. I'd love you to tell me why you think that's important for companies to better understand and start executing against.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can certainly join my sales team at any time because the preamble was spot on, right? It's a business imperative. The browning of America has happened, right? And the fastest growing segments of the population are the Latino audience and the Black community, both of which I've had the honor of serving and continue to do. It is a loaded question at this time for any brand that is serving the multicultural community. And the reality is that these are communities that want to be seen and heard, and they have their own cultural stories, experiences, nuances, and they want to be celebrated, right? They want marketers to see them and hear them. And if marketers want to make a emotional connection, which is what you need to create longevity with your brand, which is what you need to create preference for your brand, then they must authentically engage with them and speak to them in an authentic manner that is in culture, right? In culture is music, in culture is food, in culture isn't necessarily always language, but it can be. And language means a lot of different things. So as acting with intention, I think, is the most important piece of what we're talking about today. So what is your intention in reaching these audiences? And again, it is the fastest growing segment of the population. They're watching. This group is watching who's there for them, who connects with them, who understands their needs. And it's a business imperative, period. And so I think that marketers who see that and embrace that and try to figure out how to make this a part of all of their strategy, right? Like, this isn't about just having a multicultural effort. This is about the Black, Latino, Asian community. All of these communities are part of your larger audience. So how are you building in from the ground up to all of the efforts and all of the strategies that you're doing to surround your audiences those elements that wink at them, that include them, that celebrate them.
Listen, I don't think this has to be a controversial topic. Let's go back to how I started the conversation and what you so clearly articulated is that this is a free market principle. This is a rising and growing demographic that absolutely needs to be represented in marketing if you want to be able to capture those dollars. I don't understand how this is even a controversial thing. It's funny. I went to Snow White with my daughters. I have a 13-year-old, 11-year-old, and 10-year-old yesterday. And I'll be honest, we went to it. Like, it was funny because we're driving there and it was raining here in Florida. And so we were going to go to Topgolf. And I was like, well, maybe we should go see a movie instead. And my daughter said, let's go see Snow White. And I said, well, really bad ratings. And she goes, that's exactly why I want to go see it. Let's go laugh and have a good time. So we went and watched it. And then we were talking after the movie about how Rachel Zegler, who stars in it, right? She doesn't necessarily fit the stereotypical typecast of Snow White from the story 100 years ago. And then we started talking about The Little Mermaid and how they had a Black actress in kind of the lead. And I was telling my daughters, it doesn't make sense to me why that would bother anybody, because maybe you watched The Little Mermaid as a kid and had a different, unique experience, and this doesn't feel the same for you. Then don't go pay, watch it, because there's going to be other people who do want to go see that. By the way, these are made up stories. And so however you want to tell the story is the way that the artists interpret the art. And so it just makes no sense to me why we have to make it such a divisive thing when it comes down to free market will ultimately reign and decide what makes sense and what doesn't. And sometimes it flops and sometimes it doesn't. But the choices that are made usually are being made from a business imperative perspective. And that's why I think the topic that you're talking about is, we know these are rising demographics. We know that there's more spend in these demographics than ever. It is a business imperative for every company to pay heed to that and pay attention to that. And I don't think it should be something that's controversial at all. At the end of the day, we're all Americans. We all believe in the free market. And so for me, that I don't even know why it would be something that has to be a debate. You agree with what I'm saying, or am I off?
I could not agree with you more. And you actually bring up a great point, right? Because you talked about the ages of your daughters, and you talked about somebody who may have seen this, whatever, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, a different version of Snow White, and doing a comparison. Well, guess what? Those three kids aren't doing a comparison. They are growing up in school systems and cities. I mean, you're in South Florida. I mean, talk about an eclectic group, talk about a mix of ethnicities and languages all around them, right? From little Haiti to Venezuelans, I mean, you name it. And so that films like that, entertainment of that nature is appealing to a group, a generation that is, or this is the, that's what they're used to. This doesn't seem different to them.
No.
It's because there is no point of comparison, thankfully.
Thankfully. And listen, I grew up, I loved Disney movies as a kid. If you ask me what my favorite Disney movie was, it was Aladdin. Does it because maybe I saw Aladdin and I saw somebody that kind of looked like me, and it kind of felt like it represented me a little bit more, and I enjoyed it. Yeah, and that's not a bad thing. We should have that. We are a very diverse, multicultural country. That's been who we are from the beginning of the country. To be able to go and be able to see things that represent us as kids and the story being told in different ways, that's not a bad thing. And I think it's a good thing. And I think it's an important thing from a marketing and business perspective for everybody. I think that's one of the things that gets lost. And this is where I believe deeply in some of the different components of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which we're going to talk about in hiring. It's a business thing. It's a business imperative thing. You should be doing it because it makes financial sense in a lot of different ways, right? And I think that's a really important thing and an important topic, no matter what time we're in. I think that's an important thing to be able to say, because I think almost everybody would agree with it when you look at it from that objective perspective. The other thing I want to ask you about is that you are heavily involved in philanthropies in different communities surrounding around Black, Latino, and other multicultural groups. I mean, it just seems like you have a lot on your plate. So I'm wondering how you make all the time for this, and tell me a little bit about the involvement in these different groups.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll say is that lightning does strike twice, which is very exciting. So I talked about the amazing experience that I had at Time Inc. and Meredith and People in Espanol. Coming back to Essence, it has been unbelievable. And being a part of an organization at Essence and Sundial, our parent company that does the tremendous amount of work that we do to help all communities, has been phenomenal. So the festival, which, as I said, just celebrated its 30th year and has been in New Orleans the whole time, all except for 1 year during the storms where we went to Houston. But being able to give back to the community of New Orleans, like, we are so intrinsically linked there all year long, all the time. So that's amazing. We do a tremendous amount of work to elevate the future of Black and Brown women through our Black Women In series. I talked about Black women in business, Black women in sports, Black women in art. So really trying to help close the pay gap, elevate education, inspire, inform, motivate women through that series and through our Girls United series and summit, which is for the younger demographic and really hone in on growth, personal and career growth and financial independence. But it doesn't stop there. Our founder and his family, the Dennis family, created a program called New Voices as a means of providing resources, mentorship, and commerce opportunities to Black and Brown entrepreneurs. And so there is a huge breadth of organizations from jewelry, artisans, beauty entrepreneurs that they've really helped shape the future of and continue to do that. So that's really exciting. Again, I'm really lucky to be in a place again where we get to do that. You sort of intimated about my personal time. So in my free time, whenever that is, I continue to really focus a lot on health and wellness. I participate on a board for the National Alliance for Hispanic Health. And that's also incredibly rewarding. It helps me continue the work that I was doing through People in Español with the health and wellness initiatives that we had there. The Alliance is a non-for-profit organization that's really dedicated to achieving the best health outcomes for all. We really drive progress through research, advocacy programs, you know, and funding and information for these communities that desperately need it in both English and Spanish.
Finding the right talent for your team doesn't have to be a struggle. Meet Aon Hire, the world's first hiring experience management platform designed to transform the way you hire. Powered by AI, Aon Hire takes the hassle out of every step in the process. From smart resume analysis to customized interview questions, it saves you time, money, and effort. Plus, with real-time insights from every interview, you can quickly identify top candidates, reduce turnover, and stay on budget. And forget about note-taking. Aon Hire takes care of that for you. Ready to revolutionize your hiring process? Visit aonhire.com and get started today.
So involved. So how do you do it? How do you save up, make all the time in the day for this? So accomplished. I appreciate it. Thank you for giving us a little bit of insight there. And I'm sure we can include in the show notes anybody that wants to learn about any of these different philanthropies or get involved in these different communities. We can give them some information to potentially sign up or donate depending on what they choose. I do want to make sure we get into talking about hiring because that is what I am passionate about. This is what the show is about. I want to get into kind of our standard hiring questions, but I want to start here because we've already started kind of talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Yes, it feels very different to have that conversation today than it did maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, but I still want to have it because I think it's an important one. And here's what I want to ask you, not from a box checking perspective. I'm looking at this from I want to have a diverse team to hire and funnel to choose from and hire from because it reflects my customer base. That's what I'm talking about here. But working at People in Espanol, working at Essence, you probably have access to more diverse talent than I would say typically people do. So I'm interested for those that maybe do not have that same funnel of people either applying for roles or trying to work at companies like yours. What would you tell a leader that says, you know, it's important for me to have diversity of thought, diversity of ethnicity and experience on my team, but you know what? I just don't see a lot of those candidates. What would you say to them in terms of what they can do to be more intentional around hiring practices in that space if they want that for their team?
Yeah. So the first thing I'm going to say is I call BS on that they don't find the people. You know, I hear that way too often. I say you're not looking hard enough or surrounding yourself with people. Look, it's our knee-jerk reaction as leaders to go into our network, right? And so when you go into your network, you inevitably find the people who have surrounded you throughout your career in each of those jobs, right? People always joke and say to me that I'm like this master networker and I'm always connecting people. And it's true. And people will often come to me because I do have the added benefit of having worked in very specific multicultural environments. So they're all in my Rolodex. They're all at my fingertips. And you put that in the show notes too. Please do not let any open position go open too long if you're looking for multicultural talent, because I probably have somebody for you and I would love to put their name in the ring. But I would say reach out to those folks. Like, all kidding aside, I'm not the only one, right? Like, we have incredible senior leaders at major companies, you know, whether it's Netflix or Disney in the media world or Hearst, or just look around you because they're there. And so they will amplify your network further. And, you know, you talked about hiring so that the team that you're hiring reflects the people who you want to buy your products. But think about the audience, right? Like, think about your audience as well. So like, you always have to hire people that can speak in that first person, who understand that cultural environment, especially, you know, when it comes to media, which is the business that I'm in. Like, how do you reflect the people who are consuming your social content, your video content, your digital content, and how they want to see themselves come to life in the content? So that's my best advice.
I love that. Be intentional about it. Reach out and connect with people in the community to help others in the community. And I'm going to just do a shameless plug here. We've worked with numerous companies here at MSH around outsourcing, going and developing that pipeline of diverse talent, whether it be women, whether it be LGBTQ, whether it be veterans, whether it be minority groups and different demographics. From that perspective, we have been able to help because of our different connections, because of the different groups that we work with, because of our partnerships and affiliations, been able to help bring diverse talent to the table. And so a lot of the times, to your point, if you're not seeing it, you just might not be looking in the right places, or you're not prioritizing enough, or you're not being intentional. And I do think that there are a bunch of different switches for people that want that to go get it. And then you brought up a few and I brought up one. So no excuse going forward. Okay, now let's talk more general purpose, core hiring philosophy for you, people you're bringing into your org, into your team. Do you have a core hiring philosophy?
Oh, gosh. You'll often hear me say you can't teach somebody to care. And the strength of skill set is incredible. Work ethic are things that you learn about people. But how do you figure out how to make that connection between the job and really caring about the work, right? The work that is being consumed at large. Again, I'm going to fall back on the fact that we are media. And so media means that we have millions upon millions of people out in the audience who are counting on us to tell the stories, right? If it's a beauty brand, it's the stories through the filter of beauty. If it's celebrity and entertainment, like what I did at People in Espanol, it was like, how are we telling the stories of our community through filter and entertainment? At Essence, we are a lifestyle brand that has been on this journey with Black women for 55 years. For 55 years, we have been her source of inspiration. We create camaraderie. We create community. We create a place to celebrate her. And so it's really important. My philosophy is, where does that connection happen between the person that you're bringing in and how much they care about business you're creating, care about the audience that you're reaching and talking to, care about the product that you're creating. So that's important to me. And yeah, I think for me, it's also about paying it forward. So like, how are you finding the people who want to pay it forward? Because ultimately what that does is create tremendous growth among the team. And there's an equity in that, right? There's a social equity in that, feeling like everybody's in it together.
I love that. And when it comes to like identifying people that care, do you maybe have any questions that you like to ask in an interview to determine that? How do you, in an interview setting, know if you're going to, because everyone's kind of putting on their best show to get a job, right? So how can you help determine that, or any questions you might ask to determine that level of care and commitment?
I think that it's a lot about asking them what they see themselves adding to the team. What do they see themselves adding to the team? Again, the two places that we're talking about at length here, or spent the bulk of our conversation on, which is Essence and People in Espanol, there is such a tremendous amount of pride that exists around those brands. Like when somebody walks into my office and they sit with me and they're being considered, whether it's even just a contract job, like a freelance job, whether it's a vendor relationship, and they look me in the eye and they're like, my mother's not going to believe this. My auntie's not going to believe this when I go home and tell them that I might work at Essence, or when it was at People in Espanol. I mean, there is a certain level of pride that just exists. But yeah, I would say the question really is around, if you've done your homework, what is it that you bring to the table and you add? And based on what they share, it's not that hard to identify.
It's something that I look for too. It's something that I can ignite a switch in somebody. Questions that I like to ask in an interview are, tell me something outside of work that you're very passionate about, and then give me an example that shows that level of passion, right? And they might say something family, they might say cooking, they might say travel. Like, I stayed up all night to book tickets to XYZ, right? If you can be passionate about something, then I feel like I can make you passionate about what we're doing as a company and the work. And then I also like to ask, tell me something that you're near expert in and explain it to me, like I've never heard of it before in the most simplest of terms, right? And so can they take something that's they're really passionate, say, I love fly fishing or I love crocheting, and then explain it to me in a level where it's dumbed down enough where I could understand and be simplified. And I think that's a really good example of, A, you can see the passion in somebody and the way they give those responses and answers, but also how can they break down something that they know very well and articulate it and communicate it in a way that makes it easier for a layman or somebody who's not as deep into that space. That's a very effective work capability. So those are a couple of things. So some good ideas there for people looking to determine if somebody.
Well, I'm going to use that second one because I haven't asked that and I love it. So thank you for that one.
You got it. That's what I'm here for. Now, I want to ask you about memorable interview experiences. Could be bad, could be good, could be you interviewing somebody. Any that come to mind when I ask you about a memorable interview experience?
Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think. That's a tough one, right? I spent 13 years, like almost 15 years in Time Inc. And before that, probably like 12 at Condé Nast. So not a lot of moving around. You know, memorable for me was, I would say, when I met with the editor-in-chief of People in Español, Armando Correa.
Okay.
It was interesting for me that an editor, right, I had spent all these years in media, either on the side of the agency desk or on the side of media in corporate sales, but I had never, like, sat to be interviewed by an editor, right? And so that in and of itself was very interesting, but what was memorable to me was just how important it was for him as an editor-in-chief to understand that the business side of the house work very well with the editorial side. And that is historically in media a very like definitive line between church and state. And he talked about caring. Again, we are amazing friends and our friendship has transcended our working together. Thankfully, I feel very fortunate for that. But that to me was very memorable. It showed me how, as a brand, that organization, that brand, that People in Espanol brand felt about like everybody being on the team together, everybody having an equal skin in the game, if you will, from content to business to marketing. And I remember walking into his office. And again, we go back to the story about I was walking in sort of thinking, oh gosh, am I doing the right thing? Or should I be sort of waiting for another brand to come? And he crystallized it for me, I would say, within the first 10 minutes of the conversation. And that sealed the deal. Like it took 10 minutes for me to really understand this is where I want to be. And those, I think, are few and far between.
I love that. What makes a good interview for you with a candidate? What, like when you walk out of an interview with a candidate and you're like, oh, that was sensational. I want to hire this person. Like what typically happened in the interview?
They've shown me that they care. The energy is amazing. They believe in the team having to work together, you know, that everybody on the team is equally important, regardless of the role and the job that they have. Their contributions, and only through their contributions and everybody working together, can we all succeed, right? Like the saying goes, like all boats rise on a high tide. You know, if you think about the boat, right? You don't know where the leak is going to spring, but everybody's got to be bailing that water out at the same time with the equal fervor in order for us to survive. And so when I walk out of an interview where I feel like somebody brings positive energy and has a real sort of focus around being a problem solver, I know we're a good match.
I love that. How do you make people understand what it's like? Like, how do you create a realistic job preview? Or how do you make sure that the candidates understand what they're walking into if they're going to come work with Monique, if they're going to come work in your organization? Like, because it's a 50-50 side proposition. You don't want to have somebody thinking it's something it's not when they start the job. So how do you make sure that you, good, bad, or indifferent, explain everything what it's like to come work with you?
Yeah, I am brutally honest. Incredibly transparent. So when I talk to candidates, I give them all. The good, the bad, the ugly, I talk about it all. Nothing is sacred. I make them feel like they can ask me anything. I let them know it's okay. I don't think I've ever hired anyone where I didn't have three meetings with them. And usually one of those meetings is a more casual lunch, dinner, cocktails, but like you're going to spend a lot of time together. So two of those are really focused on explaining to them everything that really goes into the role, answering their questions, painting the picture of a day in life. And then one of them has to be about human connection. So that's really important to me. So those three meetings. And then the other thing that I always do is have them meet other people. Many times people that are will work with them cross-functionally, but I say to them, people who I feel work very closely with me, really understand my management style and can talk about that. And I'm also really fortunate that a lot of the people that have worked for me before and have worked in my periphery and around me and have been my peers and my colleagues, I'm still very close to. And if I need that extra push, you know, and the person is really interested in learning more, I'll say, do you want to go talk to this person? Like, we don't work together anymore, but we have friends in the same circle, or they're both in our network. Go talk to them, because at the time you're done with all of this, you've got the real.
All right, last hiring question. When you miss, and we all miss, do you look back on maybe a theme, or is there maybe something that you were doing early in your career that you've learned from, maybe a bias that you didn't realize you had consciously, subconsciously? Help me understand when you missed, why you've missed, and what you might have learned from that.
I think that when I've missed, the trend for me when I've missed has been believing I could reshape someone into something that maybe they didn't want to be reshaped into. And that's hard, right? Because that's like when somebody's interviewing for a job, of course, they bring their best. There's nothing you tell them or ask them if they can do that they're not going to tell you they can do, or that they can do already, or that they can learn. And for me, it's that nuance of, if I didn't identify something where we're trying to reshape them into something maybe they didn't want to be reshaped into, that's where I want to kick myself, because I always want to find the right place for the person to do what they love, to do more of what they love to do, because that makes them more successful for all of us.
I know that's a common thing. It comes up all the time. And it's this idea that I've seen something here that came up as a red flag, but I think I can fix it, or I can work with it, or there's an opportunity for growth here. And sometimes that's just not the case. What I always like to say about interviewing is that you're going to get 50% of what everything that you think is, like, if they do something bad or you don't like, multiply that by another 50%, because that's what it's going to be like day to day in the work. And then if it's something that you like and that they really did well, well, hopefully you're going to get 50% less of that, And so if you can still take that 50% more of the bad and 50% less of the good, and you still want to hire that person, that means you found somebody that is really going to be a good fit.
And let's face it, our businesses change and the needs change. Sure. And sometimes the stuff where you're getting 50% less of, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Because the team that's working together has other strengths that offset that. And at the moment, it's what's needed, right? So sometimes what you hired for and what the person was perfect for changes over time. And that's a whole other challenge, which is who can modulate their strengths and weaknesses to keep up with the changes that the market or the business needs.
Fantastic. Absolutely spot on. Okay, so I know you can't talk about everything, but tell me something right now you're working on that you're really excited about.
Oh, gosh. Well, so I can't talk much about it, but we're looking at different verticals within our organization beyond SMs that reach other women, right? Whether it's in the Hispanic space, the Asian space. And so you'll see us sort of develop more. Right now we've got Somos, we've got Unbothered at the R29 side of the house. We've got Naturally Curly, we've got our Black Women In series. There's more to come to punch up some of those other segments beyond reaching Black women. I mean, we've really reshaped our organization at Sundial to be an organization for all women, right?
Lots to be excited about. I love the evolution of the brands, and I love all the different things that you're reaching out to different people in different ways, going from just content to services and food and fashion and music. And I love it. Love it. It's awesome stuff. All right. Last question before our world famous speed round. What's one bit of advice that you'd give 20-year-old Monique that you didn't know then, but that you know now?
Oh, gosh. You're never going to walk away from your desk with absolutely everything done for the day.
Okay, this is good advice. Expound on that.
Never. And so you've got to really figure out, like, what are priorities? Certainly, I put everything through the filter of, like, what's going to get me in the least amount of trouble? How am I going to keep the most people happy, satisfied, right? Like, I'm in a customer service business, right? Like, we've got clients. I am client facing all of the time. And so that is the big one. In an effort to keep all those balls in the air, it's really about keeping them in the air because you don't walk away at the end of the day with everything done. And I think once you realize that, it lets you understand your priorities better. It lets you manage your time better and those priorities better. So that's the big one.
Good stuff. Okay. I want to ask you on our speed round, how long have you been in New York City?
Oh, my whole life. I grew up in New Jersey, like literally across the river. You could spit across the river. I grew up in Hudson County, so I consider myself a New Yorker.
All I needed to hear. Let's start here. What is your favorite sporting team to go attend an event to in the city?
Oh my gosh, Yankee game, because it reminds me of my dad.
Yankees, I love that. Playing my Diamondbacks tomorrow. I've been to Yankee Stadium. I wish that I would have gone to the old Yankee Stadium and seen Monument Valley. Now it's this big corporate structure, but so far so good. Yankees are playing well so far to begin the season. Okay, Yankees is the game you'd go to. Would I be more likely to find you on Broadway or at the Comedy Cellar?
Broadway.
All day. What's your favorite Broadway show?
Hamilton.
Hamilton. Did you see it with Lin-Manuel?
Lin was not in it when I went to see it, but it's amazing. I've seen it more than once, and I've seen it more than once
myself, and it's always playing in the back of my car. It's my daughter's like favorite soundtrack. She listens to it all the time. So, bagels or pizza? What's New York more famous for?
Pizza.
Okay, where's your favorite place to get pizza?
Oh my gosh, that's been changing. And you know what? I'm going to say it's actually a Jersey place. And I go every time I get back to New Jersey, and it's called La Sorrentina on Bergenline Avenue in North Bergen.
If you want to be a sponsor of the show, just DM me. We'll make sure we get you guys on here, La Sorrentina. Next question. Favorite place to go grab happy hour?
Ooh, the Campbell apartment.
Campbell apartment.
In Grand Central. So I commute through Grand Central. But if you haven't been there, it is absolutely spectacular. The ornate woodwork, the banquettes. I mean, it is like you stepped back in time. It is dark. It is full of velvet. It's everything I love in a happy hour. Great.
That was a loaded question because I'm just thinking about where you, me, and Rox are going next time I'm in the city. And
that's the place.
That's where we're going. The Camel apartment. Latin cuisine.
Oh my gosh. I should say Cuban as a Cubanita, and it is, but I'm going to say it's tie for me right now between Cuban and Peruvian because I am such a fan of ceviche.
Listen, I'm down here in South Florida. As you can imagine, we have a very diverse Latin culture, both in our company and all around. And I ask people all the time their favorite Latin food, and Peruvian is probably far and away the number one answer because it's just got such great seafood and such great light fare and obviously great ceviche. So I do not fault you there. Do you have a favorite Peruvian spot in New York City?
Mission Ceviche, Jose Luis Chavez. He had been written up by the New York Times and I had just tried the restaurant. I brought it to the edit team again. The edit team and I worked very closely. We were working on Epicurean content. And so Jose Luis and I became friends through that. And just everything that he has built is unbelievable. He has a second restaurant in New York. He does pop-ups in other parts of the world. He opened up a restaurant in Chicago. So to just watch this young Venezuelan guy who has a Peruvian restaurant succeed has been really heartwarming. And I feel like I was a part of that journey because of what we did at People in Espanol with him.
See, people think that I have the speed round just for entertainment purposes for our listeners, but actually, I'm just trying to find out where I can get a good few and good drinks.
We're getting good food.
I got La Sorrentina, Camel Apartment, and Mission Ceviche down on my list. Monique, it's been wonderful spending time with you. I appreciate you coming on, sharing so much with us about your story. Thanks again. I look forward to seeing you in person.
Same. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
We'll chat soon.
Bye.
Bye.